Do you love watching sports highlights? Five Star, the world's first sports highlight rating app, is here. Athletes and fans can share, view, and rate the best sports highlights between 1 and 5 stars. The app is comment-free and has athletes of all skill levels, even pros like Kylie O'Miller, Kyle Harrison, and the 2022 PLL MVP, Trevor Baptiste. Download 5 Star Highlights to earn yours.
Quintessential Podcast. Getting interesting. I got to tell you, I watched the Maryland-Virginia game midweek. I was away at wrestling, and man, I plugged it in on Tuesday. Unbelievable. I couldn't have had a more enjoyable time watching a college lacrosse game. We bring in Anish Shroff, who called that game, live from Charlotte, North Carolina, where he's now the voice of the Carolina Panthers. One year in the books. I want to start there, Anish. Reflect back to your first season doing 16 weeks of NFL. What was most fun? What was most challenging?
Well, first, it's the NFL, and there's nothing like it. And as much as there's travel anxiety getting from your college football game Saturday to whatever pro stadium you need to be at on Sunday, certainly there were challenges. There was travel anxiety, but the adrenaline rush kind of carried me through the season of, this is the NFL. It's the Shield. That part of it was a lot of fun. Everybody in the organization was great to me. They've treated me incredibly. The season itself felt like four different seasons. We had, you know, going into the season, if you think about it, today we're sitting here from last year, you know, three of the most productive players on offense, DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey, Robbie Henderson, have all been traded away. A new head coach. We had an interim head coach. Matt Rhule was let go midseason. And yet, through it all, this roller coaster of a ride, week 17, I'm doing a game in Tampa. It's Tom Brady's last great game of his career, barring another comeback. And the Panthers are sitting there up 21-10 in the fourth quarter, knowing that if they win week 18, they go to New Orleans playing for a division title in a home game. So it was wild. And what's different when we're doing games and for lacrosse or football or other sports, you know, we kind of come in with a national prism. And in lacrosse, we're lucky. We're always doing a game for the most part that, you know, has some meaning. When you're the voice of a team and it's one team that you're focused on, what you're wishing for from the get-go and throughout the season is there something to play for? Is there a hook? Is there a carrot? And again, despite finishing 7-10, the Panthers made it very interesting. They were 1-5 at one point, left for dead, and PJ Walker outplays Tom Brady and the Bucks in a big home win. Now they figured out a new identity after Christian McCaffrey with this power running offense, and they made it interesting, Q, and that's all you can ask for. They made it interesting. They've made the offseason incredibly interesting by trading for the number one pick. And there's a lot of hope right now for this franchise and this fan base.
We're in a position where you and I both know a bunch of NFL radio guys, whether it's Dave Pasha in Arizona.
Yeah.
Bob Wischusen doing the Jets. Here in Baltimore, Jerry Sandusky does a nice job. And it seems like they have responsibilities away from the season, draft in particular is a point of emphasis. What do you got cooking for the Panthers draft wise as we head in that direction?
Yeah, we're still figuring out our programming plans, if you will, for draft night. They have the number one pick. Last year we did a draft show centered around the sixth pick that they had. So we'll see what they do. They've got a schedule release. That's a big production for them. This fall will be the 20-year anniversary of the 2003 Super Bowl run. We're kind of in the rudimentary process of sort of putting together an anthology, serialized podcast series to reflect back on that 03 run, which, you know, had so many twists and turns. It was like any championship season, you know, sometimes there's these undercurrents that don't always get talked about. So it's a fun look back for our fans and for our community. And then there's the community events, right? Being an ambassador to your community, doing PR events, emceeing events. I just did a thing with Luke Kuechly a couple of weeks ago with Army veterans, folks who are veterans from the armed forces looking to switch careers or, now get back into civilian life. And we did a little Q&A trying to tie all that together. So, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the off season. It's not as intensive as the day-to-day rigors of the regular season, but yeah, there's still responsibilities.
So Luke played lacrosse at St. X.
With Connor Busick.
Which is a Cincinnati school. He was a teammate of Connor Busick. So what does Luke talk about lacrosse? I think he was a sort of a sought after recruit until people realized they had no shot at him.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is he was not really a big time football recruit coming out of high school. When you hear him talk about it, and he's very self-deprecating for a guy who's probably, maybe the most popular player in the history of the franchise. He's very self-deprecating about what he was in high school. He said, I was kind of a square, and Ohio State and Michigan, those schools that were in my backyard weren't even looking at me. That's why I ended up going to Boston College. But he played lacrosse, and it's funny. He said, I was just kind of one of those big hulking dudes. I had the long stick, and I just go around whacking people. Connor was the guy they all looked at as the skillful one, the high lacrosse IQ. Now, Luke on the football field, incredibly high football IQ. But, he almost describes himself as a brute playing lacrosse. But you think about it. I mean, imagine this guy, carrying around a long pole, with punishing checks. You want to be a part of that? No.
He could play, if he got in shape, he could play this summer at the pro level. When you think of him athletically, his ability to close space, to make decisions, I mean, that would be a no-brainer. Does he have any interest?
I don't think he's got any interest, but I'll tell you this. He did radio for us this year. It was his first real experience doing broadcasting. Not only is he a natural, I learned so much just about the nuances of football and how he sees the game. And you hear that a lot, middle linebacker, things that he'll look at. And even my producer, David Langton, of 30 years, he's been doing the Panthers for almost 30 years, basically since they started. And he said, Luke will hit on things that he's never heard before. And it just gives you an insight into how he thought, what made him such an instinctual player. He was always playing chess. He was always a step ahead. Really, really one of the bright minds in football. He'll watch something. We were at training camp a couple times and I'd pick his brain and he'll watch how he moves it. Watch how he moves his hip. He's like, you're not supposed to do it that way. He goes, if he's square to the ball, but to do that, he needs to be looking at this before the snap. And you could see the wheels churning. I don't know if he wants to do it, but if he ever wanted to get into coaching, I think he would make an incredible coach.
It's interesting. Those guys use all their senses. Cause when I work with Chris Spielman, linebacker, TV for 2 years, and we'd watch film together and he'd be calling stuff. And he'd talk about his ears. You use your ears a lot. Like you can listen to the grunts of the lineman and you know whether it's a run or a pass. A play action, you're not going to hear that. Run blocking is loud. But pass blocking is quiet. Like some subtleties that are just nuts. The Maryland Virginia game looked awesome. Looked awesome on TV. The crowd was incredible. The band has never sounded so full. It was just a game that I think we could put in front of any TV exec or any sports fan and say, hey, this is college lacrosse. This is what it's about.
I think we probably have greater appreciation for those kind of atmospheres post-pandemic, when we went through a couple of years where there was nobody at the game. And 2021, how many times did we do a game in front of an empty stadium? Half the time it felt like we weren't there. And when we were there, nobody else was. So to see that scene at Klockner, it was the largest crowd they've had in a decade. It was the largest crowd of the Lars Tiffany era. You look at the grassy knoll and the hills, and they're packed with fans and it's loud. And just from an atmosphere standpoint, Kark and I would look at each other during the commercials and just go, this is awesome. This is awesome. Like this is what we do this for. And people who probably looked up into the stands, what are these guys smiling about? What's with these shit eating grins? We were happy to be there. We were happy to be part of not just a great game, but a great atmosphere to boot.
I can feel that. And as soon as I plugged it in and started watching, the first thing that hit me was, Wow, I would have been really excited doing this game. I would have had to check my emotions because we're doing games from home. Again, as you said, we're doing early games in February where no one's really there. And all of a sudden, you're dropped into this. I'm like, wow, this is the adrenaline had to be flowing.
Oh, it is. You feed off that. Sometimes, especially I know my style, I can get too excited and I can go over the top. And one of the things that I've had to work on over the years is knowing when to pull back and knowing when to pick my spots. And that's a game where it challenges you to do that. All right, it's still the first quarter, it's still the second quarter. Hey, that was exciting. The crowd goes wild. But at the same time, our job as a broadcaster, we've got to meet the moment. And sometimes the crowd brings you to that moment. And when the crowd is taking you to that moment, you have to go there. Now, part of our job is with our voices, with our words, we're trying to find connectivity to what's going on. And if a crowd is going to amplify that and our energy isn't there, then you're not doing the moment justice. So it's very much having your temperature on what's going on in the field, what's going on with the crowd, anticipating sometimes the response, or if Maryland scored a goal, for example, the hush, right? The pall. And you can almost hear the voices sort of come down. Whoa, here comes Maryland. So that little give and take, that cacophony that plays out through a game, that makes the job fun.
I was surprised at the outcome of this game, and Maryland went in overtime. I thought that all signs pointed to a more veteran UVA team playing at home against a Maryland team that had shown some inconsistencies, a lot of new faces on offense. But so when I break it down, I was actually quite impressed with Maryland's offense. For them to generate that kind of pressure, score those goals or not. I leave a little disappointed in UVA. I know they can play better. I know they will play better down the road, but I thought that was a game that really lined up for them to win.
I did too. And I thought Virginia would come out there maybe a little more forceful out of the gates because that had been their MO all season. They were Tyson. They were 1980s Tyson, throwing haymakers, scoring first round knockouts. The ride offensively, the creativity, the interior passing. Their interior passing, Quint, this year is as good as we've seen in a few years. And Maryland slowed the game down early on. And I wouldn't call it a slow game, but they never allowed Virginia to play fast. Virginia didn't get many run out opportunities. There was very little transition. Maryland said, we want to make this a 12-round, 15-round fight. Can you go the distance? I thought the kid Irksa, the freshman from Georgia, Braden Irksa, he's going to be a really good player for Maryland. He's got some shake. At times he looked like a freshman going up against a fifth-year senior in Cade Sausted, but he's going to be a really good player. And then you saw some of the other bit players, guys who had secondary roles last year, like a Jack Corris, step up, scored, what, four goals in that game. The defense, Ajax Zapatello, now two games in a row, has done what no one else in the sport can do, which is to neutralize Connor Schellenberger. To me, this was very much a program win for Maryland in the sense that this team now, since John Tillman took over, has been a staple, even in its down years. And I guess you would call this a down year based on attrition, the injury to Molliver, graduating guys like Wisnowskis and Kahn and Donville and Bubba Fairman and their entire short stick D midfield. You can go on and on. The injury to their goalie, Logan McNaney, who was MOP of the championship weekend last year. You lose all those pieces facing the number one team in the country and a team that looks the part again in Virginia to go on the road in front of that crowd. It speaks to what Maryland is now, where, even when the chips are down, were we surprised? Yes. Stunned, shocked? No, because it's a John Tillman coach team. And it almost reminds me where some of these great programs that have had staying power were. Take Syracuse, the last one really, where Syracuse in the 90s, 2000s, even in a down year, you're like, they'll still probably get to championship weekend. Maybe they're not good enough to win it all, but they're still going to get to championship weekend. And then every now and then they get to championship weekend and they do win it all. Program foundation culture. I'm not counting Maryland out despite all the attrition. That was sort of a game that, this is a reminder to everybody. We're still Maryland. We're still the team that's been more dominant than anybody over the last decade plus.
Couldn't agree more. Maryland with losses to Loyola and Notre Dame, you know, inside I'm saying maybe this is not the year. They're going to get to Memorial Day, and, you know, they go on the road here with a young team. Brian Ruppel, spectacular in the goals. Zapatello and Makar. But the waves of offense, the different names now, Chorus playing well. Kyle Long's always been good. You mentioned Erksa. He jumped to me off the tape in like a week one or two game. He just runs like the wind, and still learning and getting better. You know, even Spanos, and they're just playing a lot of new faces, and it's working. In terms of UVA, Kelly's
a great example too. He scores the game-winning goal. A guy who waited his turn for 2 years, and you got to remember, John Tillman's recruited well, and so a lot of these guys are getting opportunities. And the reason they didn't, they had superstars in front of them.
And the offense looked a little eerily similar to last year. Some of those patterns that they were running, and you know, the skip passes, and guys were getting good looks for UVA. I have some thoughts. I want to hear yours. You were there in person. You talked to coach before the game. What jumps out at you in terms of areas that they're going to have to tighten up or improve if they're going to win a national championship?
You know, one, there was some uncharacteristic turnovers, sloppy passing early. I look at that more as an outlier. There was at times too much ball watching. And I thought the difference in the game was the goalie play. Now, Brian Ruppel, it's funny. I was trying to, you know, scratch my brain, you know, the series of saves and how he played. You go back to a Maryland-Virginia game, the 0-3 semifinal, when Tillman Johnson was making those Spider-Man type of saves. It kind of reminded me of Tillman Johnson, you know, the way he was moving around in the cage and, you know, spectacular save after spectacular save. Ruppel Quint, what did he save? Maybe, you know, 5-6 goals that he stole in that game?
Probably. Yeah, no, that's what the tape shows. He's right. a freshman from down the road from where I live. He lives in Catonsville. His dad, Steve's a longtime official. He's come on the scene now and played well and getting better. And I think you see the confidence from his teammates, that defense in front of him. I think he realizes that they're going to do a nice job. And if he just, you know, does okay, that's great. You know, I don't think there's any pressure on him. So he's fundamentally sound too. That's one thing. I love his stance. I love his movement. He, you know, Matt Noon's on the other hand, struggling in some departments. Like, you know, I've been there. All goalies have been there. When you're not seeing the ball, you tend to press, you tend to guess, you tend to lose your balance. And that's something that he and Kip Turner and Lars Tiffany have to clean up. You hope to clean it up during practice, and then you hope to get on game day and just relax and see the ball and trust your hands. Goalies are often their own worst enemy. You get in your own head, and on days you don't feel great, you start chasing stuff. You start seeing ghosts, so to speak. You're moving one way, the ball is moving the other way. And so you got to learn to turn off your mind and live with the results of just being honest with the shot.
Yeah, and with Noons, listen, we know he's a capable goalie.
He's a sensational athlete.
We know he's capable. These last three games, I'm sure he'd be the first guy to tell you, yes, I'm capable of playing better. The reality is this for Virginia. It's almost like some of the Duke teams in the early 2010s. I don't think Virginia needs elite goalie play. I don't think they need an All-American goalie play to win a national championship. But Noons has got to make the 50-50 saves. He's got to make more of the 50-50 saves. He's got to make more of the average to slightly above average difficulty saves. And, you know, the last few games, it's just been inconsistent. I wouldn't call it concern. I'm not worried. We saw him at times last year where he really looked good. I think you get spoiled by a guy like Alex Rode, but you also have to remember Alex Rode. Yes, he won two national championships. There were ups and downs in his career, too. There were ebbs and flows. And remember, in 2019, he was benched.
He was benched.
He was benched at one point, and then he was the MOP, right? Championship weekend in 2019.
And his Achilles heel was more the clearing. And it was just so abysmal, the turnovers and the bad clears, that finally Coach Tiffany pulled him. But, you know, Noons is a guy, we were there last year watching practice. His work ethic and his ability to challenge himself with high volume shots. I mean, he's all in. And so I am confident that he'll figure this out. Doesn't have much time though. Saturday Virginia's at Notre Dame. Kark and Cotter on the call. That's an ESPNU noon game. It's the game of the weekend. And here's Notre Dame. They haven't lost since last March. Climbed all the way up the standings.
What did I tell you, Q, before the season? What did I tell you?
I think you got them winning the national championship against Michigan in the finals. Is that your final? Michigan, your final no. two?
Not against Michigan. I said Michigan would make the tournament. Notre Dame, this kind of cemented for me when we were in Albany after championship weekend, and we're talking all these Notre Dame guys on the Redwoods, and I just walked away going, all right, I'm making a mental note of this. Notre Dame's my preseason number one. Yes, they've got talent coming back. Yes, they've got star power in the Kavanaughs. But to finish number four in the final poll, to have the selection committee essentially move the goalposts in terms of criteria, where you know you put Harvard in over Notre Dame, it just—I mean, now let's be honest, like that wasn't right. It wasn't fair, and they used something the committee did that wasn't part of the criteria. You're supposed to look at RPI wins, RPI top 10, RPI top 20, all that stuff, and they said, well, you know, Notre Dame hasn't beaten an NCAA tournament team. Well, they beat Duke twice, which had a top 10 RPI, and the committee decided not to put Duke in, and so they penalized Notre Dame. And again, that wasn't part of the criteria. Anyway, that's fait accompli. But given what we know about the Kavanaughs and given how motivated that team is to win a title, I just walked away saying they're going to have the talent, they're going to have a little extra. I just kind of walked in going, this feels like this is the year. This is the, you know, the bleep you, if you will. You know, we're going to show you. You didn't put us in. We're not going to leave any doubt. And, Quint, they've had some real impressive wins. What they did to Ohio State, I mean, you know, say what you want about Ohio State. I thought Ohio State was going to be a solid team, top two, top three in the Big Ten going into the season. Notre Dame made them look like it was their second year of playing D1 lacrosse.
I had their goalie, Liam Entenmann, on this podcast, I guess, 2 weeks ago. And what an impressive young man. And he is playing like a first-team All-American right now. I think the difference are two things. The Kavanaughs, because those guys don't know half speed. The Kavanaughs are the crazy guys who are going to be going 100 miles an hour on a Monday practice when everyone else is walking through it. And they just don't know how to turn it off. That's what Notre Dame needs. And then I think Brian Tevlin and Chris Fake later on in this season are going to get that team closer to the finish line because Tevlin and Fake know about May lacrosse.
As long as I've been covering this sport, I have not heard a coach speak to a player's leadership ability the way Andy Shea spoke of Brian Tevlin as a leader. And the fact that he went to Notre Dame as a grad transfer, was elected a captain. To me, there's a subtlety there, but when you watch him, you know, he's played with a long stick. He's played with a short stick. He's played D middy. He's played on the second midfield. He's played man down. Doing everything, the actions speak loud, and then all the stuff that we know about what he brings to the locker room, what he brings off the field, the championship pedigree, that's going to be instrumental. I have never heard a coach – you know, speak about a player's leadership the way Andy Shea spoke about Brian Tevlin. And I remember the words. He goes, that's a kid one day who's going to be, you know, a future leader in this country, future senator, maybe even more than that.
Lone captain at Yale, whose speech post-pandemic was incredible. You Google it and you can look it up. I'm not sure if it's online anywhere, but it was the most eloquent, respectful, and proper stance for a college lacrosse captain to take. A young man who dealt with some severe tragedy in his life, losing his brother to an act of violence. He's got all the respect in the world, and now he's playing the bagpipes. What else can the guy not? The guy's playing the freaking bagpipes.
And you called for double bagpipers. Now they're bringing out two bagpipers. Sound the music. Cue up the Rudy music. The fight song. Yeah, listen, right now, if I had to put money on one team to play on Memorial Day, it's Notre Dame.
That game Saturday, ESPNU at noon, I believe. Cotter and Kark with the call from South Bend. Should be good. We are working on Sunday, me and you, on the U. Got a nice time slot. Noon Sunday, ESPNU, and we'll head to the Ivy League. We got Penn and Cornell. Big game. The Ivy League regular season games, because of the league's lack of success this year in non-conference play, these games count a lot more than they did last year, I'll tell you that much.
You could feel it in that Penn-Princeton game going to overtime, and you could really feel it on the Princeton sidelines. Now, Princeton doesn't have a marquee win. They don't have anything close to a marquee win. They've played this heavyweight schedule. At some point, you got to beat those teams. And Princeton had a top 10 RPI last year. They're what, RPI in the 30s now, right around 30 maybe. Penn gets that win. Penn's banked a couple of wins here early. I think they beat Georgetown, right? So, and again, that Georgetown win, they need Georgetown to start winning to boost the quality of that win. But yeah, the Ivy League won all those games against the ACC and the Big Ten last year. It's changed. They haven't had the non-conference success. Cornell has, with the exception of the Penn State loss, which looks like an outlier on a cold, frigid day. But to me, Cornell's got a big enough target as it was going into the season. It's even bigger now because if you're the other Ivy League teams, you look at Cornell, you're going, that's one of your best chances, probably along with Yale, who's got a high RPI, to get a marquee win in conference. Everything else right now in conference either does nothing for you or does very little or hurts you.
This is a big game, and it's got star power. When you think about Penn, you think about Sam Hanley, two game winners in overtime and a win over St. Joe's and a win last week.
Yeah.
Cornell's got C.J. Kirst, Gavin Adler, and Chase Erland, their goalie, who's playing really raised the level of his play this year. He's always been good. He's been great so far this season. But Hanley and Kirst, two guys right now you'd have to say are in the top five in terms of Twitter time.
Both are playing at a very high level. Both mean so much to their team. I think Hanley might mean more to Penn than any singular player does to any team in the country. They are so reliant on him. And for Penn, this was a team that I pegged going into the season. Like, I think this is the year they get the championship weekend. How close were they in 19 losing in overtime to Yale? Last year, just ran out of gas, losing by two to Rutgers in that quarterfinal that was close and hotly contested for most of the game. They had a lot of returning players. They've had some injuries. Dylan Gergar's out. Can they find enough complementary scoring? Can their attack step up and rise up in the second half of the season? They've got some young pieces on attack, and they've got some good pieces on offense too. Gabe Fury, I thought, played real well down the stretch. Kind of waiting to see that version this year. Shipley's a two-way guy. Piper Bond, a terrific D middy. We know what BJ Farrar can do. Emmett Carroll's been solid in goal. They've got experience on the back end. And Mike Murphy, I think, is a heck of a coach. They challenge themselves in non-conference, but they got to start finding a little bit of depth behind Hanley. It almost feels that, Sam Hanley goes into every game and the world is on his shoulders.
That game Sunday noon, ESPNU, Anish and I have cover Penn and Cornell, Hanley and Kirst go head to head. All sorts of games on ESPN Plus this week. Later in the week, there's a bunch of really high-quality women's games. BTN gets in the mix. This is an interesting time of year because college basketball now is tournament only. So all sorts of windows have opened up for lacrosse. BTN's got two games on Saturday afternoon. Penn State, Maryland. Hopkins is at Michigan. You like the Wolverines in that game. BTN, that's 7 o'clock. And then Sunday, we got now our standalone Sunday games on BTN. Rutgers and Ohio State. That's a 7 o'clock. But on the ESPN side, it's Penn Cornell Sunday and UVA Notre Dame on Saturday. But I've just been enjoying Plus. I mean, I can't tell you, Anish, I'm on the road covering wrestling and got my phone on. I'm watching some games. This week, Tuesday, Navy Villanova. Wednesday, there's High Point, North Carolina. So if you're a lacrosse fan, I hope that you've got ESPN Plus.
Yeah, and we're also starting to get a little bit of a clearer picture in terms of contenders. Going into the season, a lot of folks looked at a Cornell and a Princeton, obviously Virginia, Maryland, Notre Dame, Georgetown. Georgetown has since slipped a little bit, maybe starting to find their groove. Cornell's definitely a championship contender The return of Michael Long is huge. We'll see him on Sunday. His first game back was this past weekend. They dropped 20 on Yale, at times made it look effortless. And Quint, what I love about their offense, they can beat you in so many ways. You can have CJ Kirst on an island. You have to slide to him. He can beat a long stick. If he gets a short stick matchup, obviously game over. You got to slide. He'll find the open guy. They can move the ball around. Long comes back, and now he gives you that alpha quarterback who can run an offense. Billy Coyle had been doing that for Cornell and had been doing a pretty good job, I thought, as the quarterback. So now you've got two guys who can facilitate, who can score. Hugh Kelleher, man, we fell in love with him last year during the playoffs with that big hammer of a shot running downhill. He's a guy that demands a pull. Aiden Blake, who was Cornell's top scoring midfielder before getting hurt, missed a couple of months, came back championship weekend. You know, he runs on the first midfield these days. There's a lot of weapons there. And then on the back end, Gavin Adler, you mentioned Erland. Gavin Adler, as good as there is in matching feet defensively. And you know, we saw Jack Follows. He was a big part of Cornell's defensive push. He's now the number two, and he's more of a physical presence. You know, Adler's kind of the smaller guy who can play with anybody. His size doesn't bother him. Yeah, this Cornell team is really good. And I'm curious to see now with Michael Long coming back, you know, a good offense, you know, gets now another great piece.
Jack Follows played for Team Canada last summer in Ireland for the U-20s. And he was hurt most of last year with a wrist injury, came on late. That kind of coincided with the big red run to championship weekend and an NCAA final. And there's a good chance that by the end of the year, this Cornell team this year is better than the version that played in last year's tournament. And one thing that I know that I learned a lesson a long time ago, when Cornell steps on the field, they bring it. They just do. And you got guys like Gavin Adler and CJ Kirst leading the way. This is a team that's going to compete and fight you for ground balls. They're going to do all the little things. I do not worry about them throwing in clunkers because I just think that this team's a little different now. Certainly high-end talent. This is a team that I could easily see definitely being a quarterfinalist. Certainly championship weekend and beyond, it's not out of the question.
You know, and I don't think people really appreciate the job Connor Busick has done. He's not even 30 years old. Remember, he takes over when Peter Milliman leaves to go to Johns Hopkins. Season is canceled, right? There's no blueprint for that. And you got a coach who's 27 years old at the time, keeps that team together, installs his culture, builds off of what was already in place. And let's not forget, they were the number two team in the country. I had them as number one when that 2020 season ended because of the pandemic. A lot of those guys missed, you know, two whole seasons essentially of lacrosse. They come back, they get to Memorial Day. And you know, there were moments during that season. There was one that really resonated with me. It was a late season game. Might have been against Princeton. And Chase Erland had a couple of quarters where he wasn't playing well. Busick had already pulled Erland against Syracuse. He pulled him against Army. And I remember thinking, I wonder if they go to backup in the fourth quarter. And it was one of those gut instinctual things where he sort of read the situation, read his goalie, and said, hey, you're our guy. Fourth quarter, Erland makes some big-time saves. They beat Princeton. It was 21-20, something crazy. And then Erland was magnificent down the stretch and in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, again, certain times where he used a timeout, it just certain things where you're going, this guy's 28, 29 years old. You know, Bill Tierney's leaving, Quint. Bill Tierney's done after this year. He's retiring. And obviously John Tillman and Lars Tiffany sort of as the next young coaches who can be that guy for the long term. John Donowski's had great success, but you know, that's the, I think, you know, fair to say you would think John Tillman and Lars Tiffany would coach longer than Donowski would, but yeah, I throw Connor Busick in that mix too, right? The next, you know, potentially great coach that we could see from college lacrosse.
Well, think about it. The last thing, this we'll end with this. John Donowski and Bill Tierney are a certain age. Lars and Tills are peers. They're my age, let's say. The distance between them is closer than the distance between them and Busick.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's 25 year difference.
Yeah.
Between Connor Busick and John Tillman. There's not a 25 year difference between Tillman, Lars Tiffany, let's say, and Tierney and Donowski.
Right. You're right. Yeah, it's I legitimately think, and we got a chance to spend some time around him around championship weekend last year and in the quarterfinals. I legitimately think, you know, we're looking at not a good, but a great coach. You know, the makings of a great Hall of Fame type coach. And I hate to put that on a guy who's not even 30 yet, but there are so many traits that you admire.
I don't think I've seen anything like it. And even in other sports that I've covered, maybe you've seen someone in college football or baseball or basketball similar, but
the only one I can think of was North Carolina, their women's field hockey team, right? The girl who was, her name escapes me, but she was billed as the Michael Jordan of field hockey. And I want to say less than a year out from graduation.
Yeah, she was 23. She was 23 when they hired her.
They hired her to be the head coach. I mean, yeah, other than that, I got nothing.
No. Well, Anish, thank you. I know you're super busy. We got a game on Sunday. I'm looking forward to it. They're trying to kill me, throw me on this Wednesday game. I'll get over it.
I'm sure it'll be good. Look, you won't complain about it.
No, a High Point is a team. I don't know. When I show up, High Point, I got a sense that High Point's going to deliver here and play super hard on Wednesday night against North Carolina.
Well, real quick, you know, you've watched tape on North Carolina. There's been a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde sometimes with them.
Yes, yes. Oh, absolutely. You know, I end up watching a lot of Duke today because I was watching Carolina against Duke and then High Point against Duke. And so I have a lot of Duke thoughts floating in my head, like Garrett Ledman is playing like a man possessed. But no, so Carolina gets dusted early against Duke. They're getting run off the field. Duke's offense looked incredible. McAdory, O'Neal, Ledman, what are they down? They're down 8-1 in the second quarter.
After that, they settle down.
And actually, you know, I got my notes here. I got my notes from those games. But then Carolina just destroys Brown and destroys Dartmouth. So I don't know what to believe after losing to Denver and Ohio State. So I'm seeing a lot of new faces. That's the thing that surprised me about Carolina. Harry Welford, Quentin O'Connell, Sean Goldsmith, Logan McGovern, Andrew Geppert. Okay, those are all transfers that now are playing leading roles.
Carolina is going to be a team, I think, the late April version. Who are they? What are they? There's significant room for growth there. The ACC, I'll leave you on this, Quint. The ACC is interesting because Virginia, despite the loss, and Notre Dame, from what we've seen, they look like bona fide championship contenders. I put Duke in that category, too. Duke has, you know, looked great. They're so hard to defend. Carolina and Syracuse, how much better can they get? There's some youth there. There's some new faces there. Oh, can they make a move in this next month to make things interesting? I don't know if Syracuse is an NCAA tournament team this year. Too many scars.
No. Again, Carolina blows Syracuse off the field. Carolina's got to win over Johns Hopkins, which is really the thing right now, keeping them in contention. They can't afford another slip up. This is a High Point game they have to have. But I do agree with you. Guys like James Mattin, the freshman from Gonzaga, a lot of upside. He's a really good player, really good player. This defense is good and athletic. Colin Krieg is outstanding. So they got guys, and I think Dave Metzbauer, their offensive coordinator, still kind of figuring out the new pieces. Logan McGovern's a stud. Goldsmith can rip it from the outside. Welford likes to shoot as well. It's still a work in progress offensively. We'll know in 2 or 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah. At this point last year, if somebody would have told us Cornell's playing on Memorial Day, you would have said, go get him a straitjacket, you know, like you do with me with Michigan.
Anish Shroff, thank you very much. Enjoy your evening.